Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
I like doing it. You know, I love running routes.
We better be in Florida. It better be sunny. And there better be some sort of fruity drink involved.
With Matt Harmon.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
Looking forward to facing your mom at some point.
Last night at the bar we were at, I had some really bad queso.
I've never had no bad queso, really.
Good morning. Let's go. It's Friday, August 12th. What a great show. What a great show we have today, because joining me on this fantastic ride today with a promise that we will talk not just as little Bears as possible, but zero Bears today, is the great, the one and only Andy Behrens.
I don't know if I can actually make that promise. I'm gonna have one little hopeful Bears note, I think, along the way.
Oh, no.
But I could avoid the Bears entirely if you like, but I'm actually gonna try to say something mildly optimistic.
Well, I'm gonna not bring it up. There's only one guy in this. When we tell you what the
podcast
is about,
they are my burden. You shouldn't have to.
That's a great point. If somebody's gonna do it, it's gonna be you. But yeah, it's a great show today. Later on, we're gonna be previewing the 2022 Washington Commanders. Oh boy, through the lens of fantasy football, and also, and I think this is an important exercise to do every single year, we're gonna talk about some of the guys that we might be wrong about, even if we do feel, you know, some type of way about him. But first, there's a few pieces of news for us to get through. First of all, I think this was kind of expected, or at least if you had been following the Patriots, this was sort of the way this was trending. James White announced his retirement today. James White, Andy, you know, PPR hero. I think he was one of these players that, you know, there was a time there where if you had really screwed the pooch at the running back position in your draft and it was a full point PPR format, you'd be like, I just take James White in like the ninth round and I'll get some cheap points every single week. But I think almost kind of, I hope he doesn't get forgotten in like the log of history, because he was a great player in this very specific role and had one of the best Super Bowls that I think is going to fall away from like the course of history, because it just is going to get masked up by Tom Brady. But, you know, the 28-3 Super Bowl, he was awesome in that game. But, you know, shout out to James White, who I think every fantasy player has some great memory of James White, I'd imagine.
I do feel like it's a Super Bowl that we're just going to be talking about forever, right? Because of the nature of the comeback. And I think it will at the very least be a footnote that he probably should have been the MVP. Certainly had an argument to be the MVP, right? Like 14 catches, 3 touchdowns, including the game ending touchdown, which was just like all fight and tenacity too. You sort of mentioned it, like he's the guy that you would, like, you probably weren't starting him as an RB2, even in his best years. Actually, that's not true. Probably in 2018. Was it 2018 where he had like 1,100 total yards, a bunch of touchdowns? Yeah. He was great. Other than that, he's like the guy who got you through bye weeks, you know, for over half a decade. He was great, absolutely great in his role. That's probably the best way to describe. I mean, he's obviously not a Hall of Famer, but this is what like the Ring of Honor was made for, right? This is what like jersey retirements are made for. I mean, you definitely can't tell the story of the Dynasty Patriots without James White, a wonderful player in, as you say, a highly specific role, and he mastered it, absolutely mastered it. Like, really wonderful player in that role. And again, the Super Bowl he had was just as good as it gets among people who somehow didn't win the MVP of that game.
100%. And, you know, spinning it forward, like I said, probably expected James White to not be a big factor this year, even if he was going to start the year on the PUP or miss the entire season. I think retirement was always on the table. Look, there's a reason that we kind of chase ghosts at this Patriots in this Patriots backfield all the time, because there's a lot of juice in this pass catching role, specifically with James White, you know, Kevin Falk back in the day. There have been, again, just guy after guy after guy that we've tried to get right here. We're still doing it this year. I think a lot of the reason that Ramondre Stevenson has been steamed up the draft board is because folks expected him to take on some of this pass catching role. But I would love to get your thoughts on what you think happens in this Patriots backfield, even if we never really thought James White was going to be a big factor. This comes in from Evan Lazar, who, by the way, shout out to Evan, used to work in the NFL Network newsroom with me as a fantasy researcher. Now he's a staff writer for Patriots.com. So shout out to Evan. He says the top in-house candidate to take over the receiving back role for the Patriots this season, in order, Andy, I say in order, number one, Ty Montgomery. Number two, Ramondre. Number three, Pierre Strong. He also thinks that we could see a package with Jonnu Smith in the backfield serving as the de facto pass catching back. Boy, oh boy, Andy, Ty Montgomery, what year is this?
Yeah, and I'm going to defer to him. He's probably right about this. Ty Montgomery seems like exactly the sort of boring veteran where maybe you were scratching your head thinking, I wonder if Ty Montgomery's still in the league. This is like exactly the sort of player that Bill Belichick can turn into a thing. So this may happen. Obviously, for fantasy purposes, it would be really tidy if we could just whittle this backfield down to two players we have to care about. And if that was just Damian Harris and Ramondre, that would be great, right? Like, I feel like we saw enough from Ramondre last year that we could comfortably say that he can do this. He can catch 45 balls. He can catch 50 balls. That would be really fun. Pierre Strong is the other, and I'm glad he's at least on the list, because Pierre Strong was a guy that I was super interested in before we knew where he was going to land. I think once he landed in New England, you had to start thinking of him as like the long-term replacement for James White, like a year down the road, 2 years down the road. Maybe once they make a decision whether or not to re-sign Damian Harris, maybe Pierre Strong gets interesting. So this gives him a path. He was South Dakota State. He tested, you know, just combine wise, he tested just about as well as anybody in the position. Like 4.3 speed, like 36 inch vertical, certainly has the athleticism for the position. He was a home run hitter at a, you know, small school, quality of competition issues there for sure. But I think Pierre Strong is really interesting. It was, I'll also just say, it was a bummer to take James White out of my running back ranks. Like, that was, I don't know. Yeah. I took no pleasure in that. It's one of those things you have to do. A guy retires, you got to take him out of the ranks. But I was like, oh, this is too bad.
Yeah, it's a bummer. Like I said, I think James White was a really fun player. I mean, the Ty Montgomery thing, dude, I don't know. I don't know what to think about that. I mean, at least he's not wearing jersey number 88. He's 14 now with the Patriots, which, I mean, isn't that much better. We know he's a converted wide receiver from 100 years ago. You know, he was one of the listen, on this podcast, we are not going to discuss position eligibility or whatever in fantasy. Like, I'm going to hammer that right now. We're not doing that. Do not send in any of those statements or questions. But we know he was a guy that was the face of that war, you know, many, many years ago. You know, there's still blood in the streets from the fantasy wars on that one, man.
There truly is.
I wasn't working with you guys at the time, but there was that. And I mean, oh, my God. Yeah. Anyways, stop. We're not doing this. But anyways, Ty Montgomery, it's a little strange to buy into him in the year 2022. But if he's going to be a thing, if Pierre Strong is going to be a thing, if Jonnu Smith's going to be pass catching back, that really messes up things for Ramondre Stevenson. I know there was, I'm going to call it a bit of a generous interpretation of Albert Breer's reporting that Damian Harris would be a trade candidate. I don't think that's really on the table. I think Harris probably plays out the last year of his deal. So I don't know. I've taken Damian Harris when he falls late in drafts. I've been interested in Ramondre Stevenson if he's going to go outside the top 30 backs, because I'm still betting that Stevenson leads the running backs in targets, but maybe it's not by that wide of a margin. And we also have to keep in the back of our minds here, Andy, the offensive reports out of Patriots training camp have been, I mean, show would be a kind way to put it. There's not been a good, like a single good note really.
Yeah.
Other than some of the receivers are looking maybe better than expected, but it's a brutal situation there. They're also trying to overhaul the blocking scheme to more of a Shanahan zone run style of situation, which is not what they've done before. And Matt Patricia's the guy overseeing the offensive line at the bare minimum, and maybe the entire operation. So maybe I've never been the like, don't draft the Patriots running back in fantasy because you can't predict. But like, this might be the year I might pass on this entire operation.
Yeah, the guys coaching the offense probably shouldn't be coaching an offensive unit, right? Like, so that's one probably problem. Almost every note that you see that is in any way bullish about any member of the receiving corps also carries kind of a slight condemnation of other elements of the receiving corps, right? Like, it's not, it's never just like, you know, wow, another wow play made by, you know, Devontae Parker or Kendrick Bourne or whatever. There's always just a little hint of, you know, somebody else not showing well at camp. And it hasn't been all glowing reports about Mac Jones either. And we, you know, like one thing we talk about all the time, you need to tune out all the sunshine that that gets thrown your way during camp season, but you should probably like prick up an ear when you start hearing negative reports. Didn't quite work out last season, notably with the Bengals, right? We heard plenty of negative reports about two of the great difference makers in fantasy football in 2021, but generally speaking, when you start hearing like, another ugly day for whoever, that is something you should pay attention to.
Yeah, especially when it comes to an entire unit. Speaking of negative reports, The Athletic's Nate Taylor believes that Ronald Jones needs to have a strong preseason and could be a trade candidate. Spoiler alert, I don't think anybody's trading for Ronald Jones. This means he's probably not going to make the roster if he doesn't have a great preseason. I saw a report today that he's working with the third team. Dalton and I talked about Isaiah Pacheco, who's been drawing comparisons anywhere between LeBron James or Prime Jesus, if you believe Ian Hartis. So where are you at with this Chiefs backfield, which is a backfield that we, you know, want to care about because we've tried this, right? We've tried this whole thing. It sounds like Ronald Jones is out of the mix, but not totally out of the mix. Where are you? I want to take your temperature on this because, again, you're a smart guy. You tell me what to do with this Chiefs thing.
We've been hearing Pacheco running with the first team or getting first team reps now for like a couple weeks. So that's not new. I really think the more important piece of the Ronald Jones news is that Pacheco is pretty clearly going to be part of the picture here. It might just be a special teams role, right? He might just be a return guy. He's really fast. I'm probably one of the only people around here with experience actually rostering him anywhere because I had him in like, I play a college fantasy league that is Big Ten only, which probably sounds like a nightmare to most of you. And it is a little bit of a nightmare.
You monster. You absolute monster.
Yeah. So, like, I've had to care about the Rutgers running back situation before. And, like, Pacheco can play. It was a terrible environment, obviously, but that guy can play. And he's clearly turned some heads in Kansas City. So this is any negativity about Ronald Jones, I feel like it's not even about Ronald Jones. It's about like this late round pick that they've found and they think might be gold. So that's pretty fun. Pacheco's probably a guy that you want to take a late flyer on. There's a lot of places out there where like Ronald Jones could get a pretty soft landing. So I agree with you. I don't think anybody's trading for Ronald Jones. I think it's much more likely that he becomes one of these guys that gets cut midway through the preseason so that he can find a new team and they kind of do him a solid that way, right? Because he can still play. I was somewhat bullish about him coming into the summer just because of what a disappointment, you know, Edwards-Helaire has been over multiple seasons. Not that he's been terrible, but within the context of that offense, we might have expected more. And I thought Ronald Jones could maybe be a guy who falls into a goal line role. That is pretty clearly not happening because we do keep seeing reports that like Ronald Jones with the third team again, second team, third team. It's never the first team for Ronald Jones. So that's a little bit of a concern.
Yeah, I was with you that I thought there was a chance that Jones could be a really interesting draft pick later on because he's another guy that, you know, people have been burned by. They're not going to want to take Ronald Jones really aggressively. But this is one of those things where you do ranks before training camp and it looks one way and, you know, pretty much right away it was like, okay, let me put a green light on Pacheco and put a red light on Ronald Jones and like bury him a little bit. I agree with you though, that he could still have an impact somewhere because he's not a bad runner. He's just a total tell to the defense, which is probably why he's the more you think about it, the more he's a strange fit in Kansas City because they don't want to just have a banger back out there. Anyways, yeah, so I think we see Ronald Jones somewhere, but it's probably not going to be in Kansas City. And I do think this – where are you at with Pacheco? Like, are you drafting him or do you want to see more of how this plays out? Does this move you on CEH at all? Who is that? I mean, is anybody gassed about CEH at this point?
I actually just made Pacheco this last weekend when I was in New York for the Flex League drafts. He was my last round pick, right? Like, I just thought I was taking a bunch of flyers on rookies and young running backs, and I think he's one of those guys that you have to throw into the mix because he makes this team, and he's just like just one injury away. I mean, they threw Derek Gore into the mix last year. Like, they'll mm-hmm. throw some stuff on the field and see if it works, and if it does work, they'll run with it. So. Pretty interested in Pacheco. Again, he's just a combination of physical traits that, you know, I've seen people, harken back to Kansas City running backs of the past that got a little bit of buzz in the preseason, then didn't do anything. And I just think he's a better athlete than all those guys. And there's been more persistent buzz about him from the start of camp than we're accustomed to seeing.
All right, well, there we go. We are somewhat interested in Isaiah Pacheco here. Last thing in the news, we've got – oh, by the way, before I want to give a shout-out to Lord Podcast because he did just – he slacked me on the side and said Ronald Jones to the Ravens might actually be a pretty fascinating one considering that, you know, Gus Edwards still banged up. And talk about, like, we don't care if he's a passing down back. So if Ravens is a good fit there. So that's a good one. That's why he's the Lord of Podcasts, Lord Podcast. He's got a good suggestion there. Last piece of the news, and I don't think we have to break this down because we're going to talk about the quarterback that this is going to benefit here in our next section. Dwayne Brown signs with the Jets on a two-year deal. I think in some ways this actually could be really good news for Zach Wilson anyways. Like, Mekhi Becton, it sucks what happened to him, but I think the Jets were coming into the season with, like, we'll see sort of expectations on Mekhi Becton. They switched his position to right tackle. This does make me wonder. Rich Cimini from ESPN had the same thought. Does this mean George Fant goes back to right tackle? He had been playing at left tackle in place of Mekhi Becton. Dwayne Brown is a career long left tackle, but was pretty good last year. He was 26th in pass block win rate among offensive tackles last year. So this could end up being good news for our guy Zach Wilson and the whole New York offense if, you know, Dwayne Brown hasn't just completely fallen off a cliff.
Yeah. And, like, we're drafting a ton of Jets. This isn't like, isn't some version of the Jets where you can just ignore them in fantasy, right? Maybe not Wilson himself, but Elijah Moore's a thing and Wilson's a thing and Breece Hall is going in like round three, round four, right? So it's been almost nothing but terrible news about this offensive line. So anything that patches it together is a pretty good sign.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's move on to our main section of the show today. Andy, I had an idea to do this as an episode because I think it was something you said a couple of podcasts ago about, you know, trying to envision if we're wrong about something. And I think this is always an important exercise to do because you can be super bullish on your player takes. You can be super bullish on scheme changes, but we know the NFL is unpredictable. Fantasy football there is unpredictable as well. Certain things are not going to go the way we anticipate. And I think it's important to not maybe hedge your bets, although that sounds like a cowardly thing to do, but at least envision where in the range of outcomes things can go wrong. I've said 100 times that I wish I had just taken like Deebo Samuel's 2020 season and when he was injury ridden and just thrown it in the trash and completely ignored it. I wish I had thought to myself at some point last year, what if I'm wrong about Deebo Samuel being that version of who he was and is just more like the rookie year version? And I think, look, I wouldn't have been any less gassed about Brandon Ayuk, but I would have been more gassed about Deebo Samuel. So that's kind of the way I think that we can benefit from this sort of exercise. So let's first do guys we might be wrong about, like we're concerned we might be wrong about, and then another section, this one's gonna be more fun, guys we want to be wrong about. So let's start first with the guys we might be wrong about, and I'll let you kick it off with any of the four guys here that you have on the outline.
Yeah, I think I want to start with a guy that we discussed, you know, the last time we were together, Gabe Davis. Just a crazy range of outcomes are possible for this guy, and we're in a very similar spot on him ranks wise. Like, I've got him like wide receiver 30, which basically means you don't get him because there's always somebody in a draft who thinks Gabe Davis is a top 20 receiver or at least a top 25 receiver.
Dalton Deldon. The person is Dalton Deldon.
There's very few people who think he's a top 16 receiver, but like that's where Dalton is. But there is a lot of bullishness on him. part of my opinion, of course, is simply the fact that, like, there's just never been, first of all, he's and we discussed this before, he's not going to be Stephon Diggs. There's a clear number one in Buffalo, and it is not Gabe Davis. And that right there is a problem, right? Like, he needs a significant injury in order to ascend to, like, being a number one receiver. We don't generally see a lot of number two receivers who, you know, become fantasy difference makers. However, this is a Josh Allen-led offense. I think most of us can envision the possibility that Josh Allen throws for like 4,800 yards and 40 touchdowns, right? That's definitely in play. Everybody talks about him as an MVP candidate. He clearly is. He's great. And if he's going to have a season like that, then there's going to be more than one receiving option who just absolutely blows up. We haven't yet seen the guy who was supposed to be the clear number two in Buffalo really have just a supernova season, right? It didn't happen for John Brown, didn't happen for Emmanuel Sanders. I can certainly imagine Gabe Davis being that guy. Like, there's definitely a path here. Even with a totally healthy, you know, all-pro version of Stephon Diggs, there's a path for Gabe Davis to have 1,100 yards and 10 touchdowns, 12 touchdowns. Like, that, we know that Josh Allen likes him in the red zone. We know that there's going to be a ton of points available here. So that is a clear possibility. And it does strike me that I have not ranked him as if that's going to happen, right? Like, my rank probably communicates 900 yards and 7 or 8 touchdowns. Even, you know, if Davis even has like 750 yards and 7 touchdowns, that's a big jump for him from where he's been to this point in his career. But it's still not where you want him to go if you're drafting him, like, you know, as the 25th receiver off the board or whatever. But I am cognizant of the fact that I could be horrendously underranking him, and he could actually be a star.
Yeah, I think that 900 yards and 7-8 touchdowns is a huge W for the Bills. Like, I think the Bills will say, we got what we wanted out of Gabe Davis, and he broke out for us. But he might then not have broken out at the high range of outcomes in his fantasy projection. So, but at the same time, I think if you're going to, I'm not going to redo all my Gabe Davis points from last podcast with Dalton, but I think if you are going to be wrong about Gabe Davis, Andy, and, you know, me as an extension of that, Isaiah McKenzie will have to not make much of an impact this year. I think Dawson Knox will have to not take a step forward, and I'm not betting. And James Cook, as a pass catching back, will have to not really be a big factor, despite the team signaling that they want somebody in that role. So I think that, and I think all of that's a stretch. Like, all three of those things happening is a stretch. Two of the three is most likely, in my opinion, going to happen.
Yeah, a lot of buzz around McKenzie too. A lot of camp buzz around him, and he finished the season really strong with you know, like, they didn't miss a beat when Cole Beasley was out, and in fact they were arguably a little bit better from the slot when Cole Beasley was out. So McKenzie seems like he's going to be a thing, as you say. Like, there's no way that Dawson Knox is going away. He also was just a magnet when they got inside the red zone last year. So this is entirely possible. It is totally within the range of outcomes, obviously, that Davis simply gives us 600, 700, 800 yards. The Bills recognize that as development and a positive for the team. Again, it's also possible that, like, the taste that we got in the playoffs is somewhat real and the guy ends up with 10 touchdowns.
Totally possible. I think there is a real chance we might be wrong about that. I'll go to some of my more interesting ones here. First of all, I'll talk about just the Denver Broncos in general. I think there's a chance, and I'm not ranking it this way. Like I said, I've got Russ as a top 10 quarterback. I've got Cortland Sutton as a green light pick where he goes. I've got, now that Tim Patrick's out of the mix, I'm in on where Jerry Jeudy's going as a top 30 receiver, you know, fringe top 25 guy. I'm in on Albert O as a back end tight end one. I've got Javonte Williams as a green light where he's going. Andy, I just can't shake the idea that this doesn't work out though. I don't know if it's like a hunch or a gut feeling. I don't know if I trust it. I don't know if I believe it, but I think there's a chance that the entire fantasy industry and me as an extension is wrong about how this Denver Broncos situation plays out, because I think the idea that the quarterback was going to come in and just be dropped into an offense with all great players playing at the height of their powers and just being masked by a bad quarterback, I think that's just flat out wrong, because I've said this before. Cortland Sutton was playing below expectation last year, got away or some of the blame for how he was doing literally nothing, you know, when Jerry Jeudy and all the other guys were out there and just wasn't getting open. I don't think he played well as an individual. Jerry Jeudy also hasn't quite hit just yet, even though I think there was better rookie year signal than second year signal when he was playing not with a high ankle sprain. And now they have no third receiver there that's a proven guy like Tim Patrick. So they're a little more shallow there. The tight ends aren't necessarily proven either, although I'm excited about both Greg Dulcich and Albert O. I think Javonte Williams is a perilous pick. There's not too much of a scary floor, but I think the ceiling is capped by Melvin Gordon. And then there's the Russ part of it too. And I don't want to talk bad about Russ, but he is such a specific quarterback and like dominate. Like it's like the biggest presence in the room. Like Russ this idea that, oh, Nate Hackett's going to cater his offense to Russell Wilson. Buddy, you have to cater your offense to Russell Wilson because he's short and plays a specific fashion. Like you can't just be Peyton Manning and just drop that in and it all works out. So I just can't shake the feeling that even, especially like early in the season, we're all looking at this Denver situation like, this is it.
It's also one of those situations, you know, we talk about this all the time in the NFL where we really like continuity. We say it a lot. Well, they don't have it, right? New quarterback, new coaching staff. It's a lot of newness all at once. It is a good point. It's a fair point on the receiving core as well. Like Cortland Sutton hasn't been good since the injury, right? Since the knee injury, since returning from it. I think that another year removed from that injury, we're going to see something like the earlier version of Sutton, but we didn't see it last year. I think that Jerry Jeudy has a breakout season in him. If it's not this year, it's at some point, but like he hasn't done it in the NFL for a full season yet. We've seen glimpses, but we certainly haven't even really seen like a great month from Jerry Jeudy. I mean, it's a pretty undistinguished NFL career to this point. Again, I've got him ranked as a wide receiver, like a high end wide receiver three somewhere in there. I've got him ranked as somebody that we clearly draft. He just hasn't done it. And Albert O hasn't actually done it over a protracted period of time in the NFL. So it's a fair call out. The other thing with Wilson, and I, you know, listeners to this podcast have heard me make this point before, he did not run at all last year, like at all. He didn't have,
and he's 33 years old. Like he's 33. That could be a evaporating part of his game.
Yeah. He didn't have an injury last year that should have affected his running and he didn't do it. Like, I don't think he had a 40-yard rushing game last year. So if that element of his game is gone, he needs to throw 35 touchdown passes. Like he's got to be 4,500 yards and 35 touchdown passes if he's going to justify the sort of average draft position that we've given him. Because again, this is not like he's kind of out of the dual threat quarterback club right now.
It'll be a big referendum season, I think, on Russ, because it's like, wow, look at Russ with these great receivers. In theory, we've seen Russell Wilson with two like top 10 receivers, in my opinion, in DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, or fringe top. Like you could make an argument that those guys are top 10 receivers. I still think from a talent perspective, potentially the best duo in the NFL. We've seen that. So was it really just all Pete Carroll holding him back this entire time? I have a tough time buying into that being the case. And, you know, at some point in fantasy, you do have to pay the ADP price for assumptions. But I think we're not giving enough credit to how much assumptions we're baking into all of this Denver thing. And like I said, I'm still ranking these guys as mostly green lights, but I'm pretty terrified that I'm wrong about it, basically. Speaking of baking in assumptions in ADP, I want you to talk about Trey Lance because, look, this might be the only time I'm assuming here that you're going to say, like, what if this goes wrong with Trey Lance? I'm making the assumption, speaking of assumptions, but... But we're going to be all gassed up on Trey Lance this entire month of August here on this podcast and mostly throughout the fantasy industry. So, Andy, what if we're wrong about that?
Yeah, really, really easy to make the case for him, right? I mean, he had two starts last year, and in those two starts, he ran the ball 24 times. So that's awesome, right? Like, we know there's as long as he's healthy, we know there's a rushing floor there that's going to be really good for fantasy. We know that his receiving core, like 1 through 3, is just absolutely as good as it gets. Deebo, Ayuk, Kittle, like that's great. That is, we're set. But I mentioned earlier, like we need to pay attention when there are reports from camp that aren't glowing, right? And this feels like a little bit more of a roller coaster ride than we would want it to be. Oh, yeah. You look at the Twitter feed from the guys who are at Niners camp every day, and as often as not, you're seeing a mixed bag from Trey Lance today. Trey Lance was 10 for 20 today. You know, like it's not always great. And a lot of the great moments are really just hero plays by Ayuk, right? Like all the buzziest clips that we've seen have just been Brandon Ayuk doing incredible things. So it could be that they don't really have a passing game that can sustain drives and support an offense that's going to average like 27, 28 points per game. Like this might not be as, you know, and I've got Lance ranked right now, right next to Jalen Hurts. Like I don't really see a whole lot of difference between these two. They both have excellent receivers. Hurts, obviously a little bit more experience. Neither one of them is a sure thing as a passer. They're both, I think, going to be terrific rushing options for their team. I think the Niners are going to do fun things with Trey Lance. I think they're going to give him, you know, an offense that really suits his skills. But it is entirely possible that he does not finish as like a top eight fantasy quarterback. And that's where I've got him ranked right now. Like I don't see a huge divide between him and Jalen Hurts. It could very well be that he simply can't pass at a level just yet that that allows this offense to be what we think it ought to be.
Roller coaster, I think, is the best way to say it, as you did. There's going to be some high highs, and even the Niners training camp reports have basically been that everybody says like once they get into actual team drills and he can kind of break the mold of the offense a little bit, that's when you get a lot of good stuff there from Trey Lance. But it's going to be rocky. I think there's almost no way that it's not rocky this year for Trey Lance, and that's fine. It's all part of the development plan for the player. I think in fantasy we just have to accept that,
and none of that's going to matter if he runs for 800 yards, right? Like if he runs for 800 yards and 8 touchdowns, like he's going to be great.
Exactly. I think there's no way he fails really in outright fails in fantasy, but there's certainly a chance that the offense is a roller coaster, as we said. I want to talk about DeAndre Swift. Like, you know, when you really get into the efficiency metrics from a rushing perspective for DeAndre Swift, they're actually not very good, right? You know, like from just an actual rushing perspective. I also wonder about, you know, everybody talks about Amon-Ra St. Brown's target totals. Everybody talks about how he's not going to do what he did then last season because DeAndre Swift is there. Well, what if DeAndre Swift doesn't do what he did as a receiver early in the season because of the offensive coaching staff change? We know that Anthony Lynn's out the door, and I think they'll still use DeAndre Swift as a receiver. You know, Dan Campbell was the one who specifically compared him to like Alvin Kamara, you know, when he first got there to Detroit. So I don't think that's totally going to go away. But again, what if his receiving role, DeAndre Swift, seeds more towards Amon-Ra St. Brown and all the other guys that they've got there now? I think that's entirely plausible. St. Brown's ADP bakes in the risk that he's not going to have the role that he did to end last season. DeAndre Swift's ADP does not bake that in. I'm greenlighting DeAndre Swift. I will draft DeAndre Swift where he goes. But they still want to use Jamal Williams. There was Jeremy Fowler from ESPN reported today. He even said, you know, the dreaded, this is going to bother fantasy managers, but they're going to split the carries. I don't really actually think that matters that much. Like, Williams' role should be assumed in this offense because he's a pretty decent back and he's just coach's catnip, man, because he's so reliable. But anyways, DeAndre Swift, are you concerned at all that we might be wrong about this guy?
I'm glad you introduced this name, because I feel like every time I talk about Amon-Ra St. Brown, I always make the point in a very general sense that it was sort of what they unleashed late last year. There's no way you can put that back in the bottle, and Amon-Ra St. Brown is going to be a thing. And I feel like I'm never forced to specify where those stats are going to come from, because somebody has to pay for it, right? And it could very well be DeAndre Swift. Like, this is a good call. I'm just looking at his game log right now. And obviously, you know, there was a point last season about midway through the year, he hadn't been injured yet, when you're like, wow, is this guy going to catch 90 balls? Because he started the season 8 catches, 4, 7 catches, 4, 6, 5, 8. Like, that's the way his season was going to look. He was going to have a bunch of like 6, 7, 8 reception games. That's huge. And it is the reason that there's somebody in every draft who is looking at him in round two, right? I haven't drafted a lot of him because I just don't like, he's not my guy in the second round, in part because I know that he's in a committee. Like, there's no question he's in a committee. He's got the best part of it, and they trust him. You know, they get inside the 10-yard line, they still trust him. They still put him on the field. So it's not like, you know, he has absolutely no presence at the goal line or anything like that. But he's a guy who's probably capped at something like 16 touches a game, 17 touches a game. I think he's in line, you know, like just thinking about DeAndre Swift, I'm like, how is this guy never going to have like a 90 catch season? How is this guy not going to have an 80, 85 catch season if he remains healthy? But this is an entirely plausible place for some of those Amon-Ra St. Brown stats to come from, right? Like that makes a ton of sense. Because we also saw, and you and I have talked about this, like they didn't, it's not like St. Brown was just the slot receiver. They were doing a whole bunch of really fun things with him, including putting him in the backfield occasionally.
Yeah, and I don't think he leaves the field this year. I think he's like a 90% snap player, Amon-Ra St. Brown. Let's go rapid fire here. Just like you can list them off and maybe say a sentence about what we might be wrong here with the rest of these guys before we transition to the guys we want to be wrong about. You've got Cam Akers, Devin Singletary. Real quick, what do we think we might be misreading there?
Yeah, this is one guy I get none of. I don't get any Cam Akers, but I am concerned because there's always like – there's also always somebody in a draft who I like respect and I consider a competitive player who really likes Cam Akers and takes a little victory lap after they draft him. So I worry about that. No fault
who
of his
own.
Who are
these people? I know we said we're going to go quickly. I don't know if there's one single person I know that is in on Cam Akers, but maybe
there's people who really like Cam Akers. And I get the idea that, you know, if he just gets the workload that he saw in the playoffs last year, like, and he's healthy, that's great. But he wasn't a good player in the postseason, right? Like he almost fumbled away the Tampa game, never more than like 55 rushing yards in any game. And it's not even his fault. He was like 6 months removed from Achilles surgery. So it's fine. Hopefully he's better. It's just every time Sean McVay talks about his backfield, he mentions both Henderson, he mentions Akers. I'm not sure he's the full workload guy, but if he is the full workload guy, that's like 1,700 yards and a bunch of touchdowns, and maybe you win your league. And then the other guy that I had on the list was Devin Singletary, who I do get a lot of, and I feel like I kind of smirk when I get him, like I know something that other people don't, right? He was so good last year when he had something close to like the full featured role, when they just decided, hey, we're going to make this Devin Singletary's backfield. It was 17, 18 touches a game. It was a bunch of yards. They threw to him. He was fine in the end zone. He had no trouble when he was in goal-to-go situations. It was great. It is totally still possible. I mean, Kareem Hunt is a trade candidate. Josh Jacobs may or may not be a trade candidate. Like, there's a lot of good backs out there who could still land in Buffalo and mess this up for Devin Singletary, so I worry that I might be wrong there.
Yeah, I hear you on both of those. My two guys, one super boring, Devontae Parker. I'm more in on Jakobi Meyers and Kendrick Bourne. I think those guys are the best receivers on the team. But I had to bump Devontae Parker up because it sounds like he's going to be the one that plays every single snap and is the legit X receiver on this team. So I think there's a good chance that he just never leaves the field and is the best receiver on the team, even though I think he's third in terms of talent, but who really cares? It sounds like the Patriots offense is going to suck. More interesting is DJ Moore, who finished wide receiver 19 last year, is drafted a couple of spots ahead of that, but I've got ranked as wide receiver 11. And I actually have him top five in the NFL in targets because the Panthers have played with more pace than we think. They've thrown the ball with more pace than we think. He's going to have that season at some point where he scores 7-8 touchdowns. I don't have him projected that way, but I'm ranking him as if like he takes that step with Baker Mayfield. But what if Baker Mayfield is more like 2021 Baker Mayfield or 2019 Baker Mayfield and not the 20? I mean, we're just kind of asking for 2020 Baker Mayfield here to hit with DJ Moore. And what if we don't get that? I think there's a chance I'm wrong about DJ Moore, and I do have him ranked aggressively.
Yeah, we've talked about him before. I don't have him ranked particularly aggressively, but he's also one of those guys where like if we were just redrafting the entire NFL like from scratch for like real life purposes, he'd probably be a top 10 receiver for me. I think he's great. He's so just good. So far, he's just following this like Brandon Marshall, Allen Robinson path where when are we ever going to see him with a great quarterback?
Yeah, the floor feels great for DJ Moore, but I've kind of got him ranked closer to his ceiling, and I don't trust the Panthers to not F it up, which doesn't feel really smart for me. Andy and I are going to take a break here real quick, but when we come back, we're going to talk about the guys we want to be wrong about. I'm looking forward to it right after this. All right, Andy, guys we want to be wrong about. We're pretty confident in how this thing is going to play out. With these players, maybe, but we also might be wrong about it. Why don't you start off with Saquon Barkley here? By the way, Dalton Del Flamethrower is going to come on the podcast next week and just absolutely rip us with Saquon Barkley hot takes. So keep that in mind. But you tell us why you're a little worried we might be wrong about Saquon.
Well, I don't have any Saquon, right? Like this is another guy where there's always someone who thinks he should be like a back end of the first round, early second round, you know, takes a little bit of a victory lap after they draft Saquon. We've seen a ton of perfectly ordinary camp clips where like he's catching a pass unguarded in the end zone, and then it's rocket emoji, stock up emoji, right? Everybody's super excited about him. And like, you're not showing me anything here. Like, he's not doing this against a defense. We're not like, I hope that we get the version of Saquon Barkley that, you know, in college, like at Penn State, he was one of those few college running backs. And like, I'd take it back to like Adrian Peterson, maybe one or two other guys, where just at the college level, you just knew this guy's a star. Like this guy is ready to be a very good NFL player right now, almost any environment. So like, I had very few questions about him coming out of college. And I wouldn't say that about very many running backs. And then he was great immediately, 2,000 scrimmage yards, and the injuries clearly took a toll. He was not a good player last year. The first guy who touched him almost always tackled him, right? No big plays, no breakaways, very few missed tackles. But he's another year removed from the knee injury. It could be good. I hope it is. But at this range of a draft, I am much more likely to I think I'm drafting the guy who played last year, right? Like I can't build in a lot of enthusiasm, especially when the version of this player that we most recently saw was utterly ineffective. However, they haven't, like, there's nobody behind him that signals that the Giants particularly worried about Barkley, right? Like this depth chart is his. It is clear that they intend to give him 300 plus touches. So like, he's stepping into what should be a full featured workload. It's totally possible that he could catch 75, 85 passes. That's great. And if he's 95% of the rookie year version of Saquon, he's going to be a home run. I've got him at like RB20, RB21, something like that. Again, because I'm assuming we're going to get the guy that we saw last year. So I just never get him. I would love to be wrong, because the Penn State version, the rookie year version of Saquon is one of the most thrilling runners that we've seen.
Well, like I said, Dalton's going to come on and give his full Saquon rebuttal. So I'll leave that for, again, foster our healthy disagreement, because I'm kind of in the middle again on Saquon there. So I'll give you my guy, and mine's Ezekiel Elliott. I actually think that there's a chance that the scenario I talk about plays out here, but I don't have him ranked that way. I've got him at RB16. So he's like a yellow light pick there for me, you know, whatever, you know, in RB tier four, right before the quote dead zone, but still in sort of a precarious situation there for Zeke, where I'm not totally saying like, hey, you got to go draft this guy. But here's the deal with Zeke. Number one, Andy, I love it when the entire fantasy, it's seemingly like fantasy Twitter has had a narrative stuck in their head and it just goes to hell right away. And you know, the narrative about Zeke is that he's washed and Tony Pollard's better because he is yards per carry and explosive run rate and whatever. I don't know why I'm doing the Jerry Jones impression when he's the Zeke backer. That didn't actually make any sense. Point is here, Elliott was good to start last year, right? Like from the first 5 weeks of the season, averaged 90 rushing yards per game, was targeted 11 times, scored 6 touchdowns. Like if he's the player that he was before this PCL injury, if we buy the PCL injury being a big problem for Zeke last year, and he's just the guy he was early last season, I think this would be a really fun season for Zeke. You know, I think this, I kind of think that at his peak, Zeke was an awesome player to watch. He's like the life cycle that we talk about, the life cycle of fantasy backs, or at least I do all the time, where he goes from, you know, the absolute darling of the fantasy world to this guy that we're all ready to see enough of and get the younger, exciting guy on the field. He is like the peak of both of those extremes there. So I kind of want to be wrong about Zeke, and I want him to have this like RB1 season where because he would be an extreme value where he goes if he actually returns anything close to what he was doing last year, much less what he used to be doing. So like he's a back that's not going to cede much rushing work and is not totally going to cede the passing down stuff to Tony Pollard either. And he's tethered to a good offense that needs juice from somewhere because of their passing targets are so, you know, terrible beyond CeeDee Lamb and Dalton Schultz and maybe Jalen Tolbert. That's kind of like a back you want to draft in fantasy. And I think that he's sort of, what if we're wrong about where Zeke is at this point in his career?
Yeah. The other thing that Zeke has going for him is that he can have an inefficient real life game that is really good for fantasy, because they get down to the 5-yard line and he is on the field. So
he's banging it in. Yeah.
Yeah, he can have a game with like 18 carries for 49 yards and 2 touchdowns. Like, that's totally in play, and that's fine. Like, that's great. That's a good fantasy day. You can win your week with that. So he can have bad games and still finish the season with like 12 touchdowns, 14 touchdowns, something like that. That's totally in play. But I actually buy the story about his, you know, because the Cowboys talked about his injury last year. They didn't specify yep. what it was. Took us until, you know, the offseason to learn that it was the PCL, but that's a real thing. You know, that's one of the mm-hmm. CLs. You want all your yeah. CLs functioning to be at your best as a running back. And so, like, he's just one of those guys who plays through an injury, and then, but we don't give him any credit for it. This, you know, we've talked about that with Odell Beckham before, with Antonio Gibson, and it applies to Zeke as well. We all decided that Tony Pollard was a better player while Zeke was playing with a torn knee ligament, and that might not be right. Like, you're absolutely right to call out that he was a good player early in the season. All of the offseason reports have been glowing here too. So it's, yeah, I agree. It's in play that Zeke Elliott finishes as like the RB5. Like, that's, he's,
yeah,
they want to feed him. And there's, like, if we think the Cowboys are going to be a good team, we think they're going to be a division contender, a playoff contender. Of course he can score 12 touchdowns, 14 touchdowns. That's what they have in mind for him.
350, 400 hate touches. That's what's coming to Zeke Elliott this year. All right, give me another guy that you want to be wrong about.
I would love to be wrong about James Robinson, and he's buried in my ranks. And it's the very late season, very, very serious injury, right? It's the Cam Akers situation, the Achilles. James Robinson is playing in camp though, and he's getting all kinds of time with the ones. That's a great sign. I would love it if James Robinson not only can be on the field in week one and early in the season, but can actually have like a half share of the workload. I think that would be an incredible story. I think he's just generally a wonderful story, right? Like a totally ignored commodity coming into the league who just agree. Starred right away in an ugly environment too. Like in an environment where anybody like could have been excused for not putting up numbers. He did. So he was a great story the first couple of years. Really got like, you know, everybody got mistreated in a way by Urban Meyer last year, but James Robinson really did, right? Like often coming off the field while Carlos yeah. Hyde was trotting on, like, what the hell? Why did that happen?
To the point that Trevor Lawrence was even like, what are we doing here? It took right. publicly to the media, like a rookie quarterback was saying right. that's a lot.
It was wild. And then for his season to end as it did in injury, I really hope he comes back and he's great. I haven't ranked it that way. I haven't drafted him because I just find it to be an implausible injury recovery, but I hope that's wrong and I hope he's great.
Yeah, I'm with you. I want to be wrong about James Robinson. All right, I'll go rapid fire on my last three here and then let you round it out with your last two. Sort of rapid fire on the first, but definitely rapid fire on the last two. I want to be wrong about Rondale Moore because, you know, Cliff Kingsbury and the boys are all saying like he's going to take the Christian Kirk role. He's getting expanded role. Excuse me for not trusting Cliff Kingsbury and like his deployment of players and being all that sharp about it, because we've seen since he's come to the NFL, he's just not. So I want to be wrong about that. I'm ranking Rondale Moore as if he's going to still play at least somewhat in the role he had last year, which I want to read this off because I cannot overstate enough how Rondale Moore's rookie year reception perception is the weirdest profile. I've been doing this since 2014. It's the weirdest by far. So just a few notes here. Rondale Moore ran a screen route on 29.9% of his sampled routes in RP. That's the most by a country mile. The previous high was Deebo Samuel at 18% in that injury-wrecked 2020 season. Scrolling down further, you've got Albert Wilson in a partial sample at 14.8. That's a 50% drop-off from what Moore did in 2020. Moore ran against zone coverage on 89% of his sampled routes. It's mega rare for a guy to go over 70%. It's just wild stuff, like historical outliers by 10%. Like, he were lined up in the backfield 18.2% of his sample snaps, which you guessed it, that's the highest rate in RP history. Like, he just wasn't even playing real wide receiver last year. Yeah. And I'm nervous he's going to be back playing not real wide receiver last year or this year again. But I'd love to be wrong about that because I think Rondale Moore's fun.
I'm glad you mentioned him because he popped into my head when you were discussing Deebo Samuel earlier. Like Deebo early in his career, Rondale Moore was a guy who was just basically targeted at the line of scrimmage and never went yeah. downfield last year. And so, like, what do we do with a guy? Like, early stage Debo was not even really playing receiver in any sort of traditional sense. It's much the same. Yeah.
It's really hard. And now I'm like sort of saying to myself, hey, remember what you just said at the start of the freaking podcast where you wanted to toss out Debo's 2020 season? Maybe I should toss this out too. So this actually might make me rethink my ranking of Rondale Moore. But last two things too. I want to be wrong about Chris Godwin. I freaking love Chris Godwin. I want him to be a baller this year with his ACL tear, but I'm not ranking him that way and I haven't been drafting him. And lastly, I mean, the Seahawks. I want to be wrong about the Seahawks, okay? Because Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf are great receivers, and I want them to be great, and I don't want them. But this is an unserious quarterback situation, and I'll leave it at that. Andy, quickly hit me with your last two guys before we have to talk about the Commanders.
Yeah, the other two names here, and I'll try to keep it brief on the Bears. I really want
you want me to time you again?
I really want to be wrong on Darnell Mooney. And it's not like I'm, you know, not like I hate Darnell Mooney or anything, but I generally, my opinion of Darnell Mooney is that like he is the Bears number one by default, but I've been of the opinion that almost every great team has a receiver of Darnell's quality sort of in a supporting role. And then I don't know, the other day, I'm not usually vulnerable to, you know, camp clips and the like and camp buzz, but man, I'm seeing some highlights of Darnell Mooney plucking a one-handed catch in traffic. And I'm like, maybe that would be awesome if he's that guy in the regular season consistently. I'll take that. So I would love to be wrong about Darnell Mooney. I would love for him to be like a legit number one NFL wide receiver and not just the Bears de facto number one wide receiver. And then the other guy I would like to mention is Zach Wilson, who we sort of teased earlier. He really has to be good. I don't have him ranked that way. I've got him ranked like just absolutely buried in the undraftable range, beyond QB 25. I think like he's way down there for me. It's not like he doesn't have exciting traits. He's got a huge arm. He can run a little bit. The offensive line has definitely been a concern, but he's the key to a lot of stuff for the Jets, because as we said, like we're drafting the shit out of this team. We're taking Breece Hall early. We're taking Elijah Moore early with good reason. He's a huge talent. We're drafting Wilson. We're drafting a whole bunch of guys on this roster. And if Zach Wilson can't make it go, that's a real problem.
Echo everything you just said about both players. So we'll leave it at that. All right. Let's talk the Washington Commanders with the time that we have left here.
We did such a good job avoiding the Commanders and pushing them down. So well done. That's just good. Yeah.
Hey, man, I'll gladly take that compliment. Thank you. All right. Where do you want to start? I mean, where do you want to start with this team? I'm going to leave it up to you. I mean, I'd start with Terry McLaurin because I'm in the bag for Terry McLaurin, but I'll leave it up to you.
Yeah, I guess let's start with McLaurin because he's great. He is the one player that I can see overcoming, as long as he's healthy, overcoming an otherwise super uninteresting and unenviable offensive situation here, right? Like I don't love Carson Wentz, obviously. I don't think anybody loves Carson Wentz, but we have seen Carson Wentz support, you know, wide receiver ones before. Like that can happen. He's good enough to make Terry McLaurin a thing again. And I hope that's right, because McLaurin can get easy separation from anybody. He's a deep threat. He's a short threat. He's like, this is a number one. This is the kind of guy that I would love Darnell Mooney to be. Like I'm certainly excited about McLaurin. I think he's the one element of this offense that you can feel good about drafting. But beyond McLaurin, I'm like, Antonio Gibson's going to get a lot of work, but probably not as much work as he got last year. Like if you come away from your draft without any Washington Commanders, that's just fine. that's not really a hole in your fantasy portfolio.
Yeah, I mean, I love McLaurin. By the way, I said this to you last time we saw each other in May. It seems like Bears fans are mega sensitive online right now because everybody's being mean to them, and they're, you know, I get it. They're a proud franchise, but there's a few like Bears folks that are, you know, well, look at Terry McLaurin's stats. Everyone thinks he's so great. They're the same as Darnell Mooney's. It's like, watch a game for once in your life. Watch a game. But I'll leave it at that. And like I said, I like Darnell Mooney, but Terry McLaurin is to me Stephon Diggs 2017, 2018, where you just get him in the right situation, man, he's going to fly. This isn't the situation as we know, but I do want to draft McLaurin because I think he's relatively safe. Because Wentz is a quarterback upgrade, he's relatively safe, and still I do believe he's so good that he has top 10 receiver in his range of outcomes because he's just that talented. I also, I mean, look, if I really was honest with myself, I'd actually maybe I'm saving us from talking about the Commanders for a long period of time here on the show, because there's a part of me that likes a lot of players here. I mean, I still have the candle lit for Curtis Samuel, even though there's health questions about his health and conditioning and stuff like that. I love the way Scott Turner plays offense. I said this, I think, on the quarterback projection episode with Josh, that, you know, the Washington Commanders offense and Panthers offense under Scott Turner, young Turner, play fast and they throw the ball more than we think. So I'm kind of ahead of consensus on Jahan Dotson, who's just a good football player too, and can deal with Carson Wentz's inaccuracy because of his style of play. So I don't know. Maybe I'm trying to save myself, because I actually kind of like these pass catchers and the pace of play here.
Yeah, I think the best version of Curtis Samuel might be a little bit more interesting than Dotson, but Dotson is one of those names that just pops up in the Twitter feed like every day. He seems to be making a play that makes beat writers, you know, mention him in camp. Obviously a really good college player, not, you know, gaudy stats exactly, but really productive in a not thrilling environment. So I think Dotson can be a thing, but not, you know, an every week starter. Like, I just don't think that this receiving core produces a second player outside of McLaurin who is just a plug and play every week guy. I think that seems a little far fetched to me.
You know, if you, this probably feels like an atrocious hot take, but, you know, all of the flowers I didn't throw on the Denver receivers there. You know, I think if you took Russell Wilson and dropped him on the Commanders offense, I'd be so much more gassed up. That feels like a stupid thing to say, but I'd be so much more gassed up about this receiver core working with a proven good quarterback than the Denver receivers working with a proven good quarterback. And I probably would have said that pre-Tim Patrick injury as well. I just really like Dotson and really like Samuel, but you have to take a few leaps of faith with both players, but especially with Samuel because of the health concerns.
Yeah, I'm trying to run through it. Like, if Russell Wilson were on the Commanders, I think I would draft Terry McLaurin as like the wide receiver 8, 7, right? Like, he's right in there, because there would be a clear drop off, I think, between McLaurin and anybody else. I could really talk myself into the idea of Terry McLaurin as a 160 target receiver, and those targets now coming from Russell Wilson. That would be really exciting. I would take it.
Yeah, I mean, that fantasy land sounds awesome. But yeah, so I think you kind of have to take him, though, if he has a top 8 ceiling just because of how good he is at wide receiver 15, like in ADP right now, wide receiver 15, 16. I think you kind of have to take him there, at least sprinkle him in a little bit, or don't outright avoid him. Last thing here, the backfield. I'm coming out with my running back projections lessons, and one of my biggest takeaways doing projections is Antonio Gibson is just stuck in the stone worst role for fantasy, which is that super problematic between the empty carries between the 20s. Andy, Antonio Gibson, any situation where you're drafting him?
Yeah, this is brutal. He's really got a fall. I've got him right next to Barkley in my ranks, basically, for two entirely different reasons. I think Antonio Gibson's a really good player. And this is just kind of a nightmare scenario, because, as you say, like, it's not just McKissick. McKissick is one problem. He's gonna vacuum up a lot of receptions that could easily go to Antonio Gibson. He's good at it. He used to be a receiver. I don't know if you remember back in the day.
I may have heard that.
Yeah. And then they had Brian Robinson, who I'm not even sure if Brian Robinson is a good player. But they're talking him up as if it's going to be the Jonathan Stewart, D'Angelo Williams situation, and Brian Robinson's going to take all these like short yardage goal line carries. So like the most high value carries go to somebody else, and a lot of the receiving workload goes to somebody else. So there's probably still a path for Antonio Gibson to get to, you know, he's a 300 touch guy last year while playing on a broken leg. Incredible season, but like when you really consider the situation he was in, he's probably going to get 230, 240 touches. But as you say, they're going to be not at the goal line, and they're not going to be, you know, it's not going to be a high volume receiving role. So that's a huge problem. I do want to mention Robinson, because I was just having a drunk conversation with John Daigle over the weekend in an Uber about Brian Robinson, which actually started as a conversation about Memphis running backs, but that's neither here nor there. And
a couple of cool guys here.
Yes, exactly. It was the conversation was like the highlight of my weekend too, which tells you where I am in life and obviously where Daigle is. Like, it was a joy. It was a joy talking football with Daigle. It was great. But he mentioned, you know, like he, you know, not to put words in his mouth, but he was pretty down on Robinson. And the point that he made was like, this is the one Alabama running back who couldn't manage to rush for 5 yards per carry, right? Like, everybody else gets behind that offensive line that is just full of future pros against a college schedule. Sometimes nobody's even touching you until you're 8 yards downfield, right? And he's like, now, granted, we're comparing him to like Jacobs and Najee Harris and Henry, and like it's a long list of very productive NFL running backs, but like Brian Robinson's the one guy who came in at like 4.9 yards per carry for freaking Alabama. And like, is he even any good? He had a lot of work there. The coaches obviously trusted him. That matters. But it was not a particularly impressive collegiate season, all things considered. And why this guy has to take over like a super valuable role in this offense is just, it's annoying, to say the least.
Yeah, I just think you don't have to be that high on Robinson as a player to believe that he's going to be a huge thorn in Gibson's side. Bottom line, Antonio Gibson, I've got him projected for 6% of the team targets, which might be too high. I've got JD McKissick at like 10%. And, you know, Gibson's career touchdown rate, because I expect Robinson to take that, is at 4.2%. I've banged him down to like 3.5% rushing touchdown rate, which all that equals out to Antonio Gibson is nowhere close in projections to his RB19 ADP. I'm not outright against taking him because injury chaos, like if one of these two guys gets hurt, he could get one of those roles back, but it's going to have to be way below his ADP right now for me to take him. And that's kind of that on that.
Yeah, I know I've mentioned this 1,000 times, but I hate to see this guy like pay the penalty for playing through a broken leg last year. Like that, I get that everybody was disappointed with him. I understand the team was apparently disappointed with him. He gave you 16 games and he played like half of them on a broken leg. Like that just floors me. That is super impressive to me.
Yep, I remember it very, very clearly because he was on all of my fantasy teams last year. So on that note, that's going to do it for us. I will not allow myself to talk about force Andy to talk about the Washington Commanders any longer and my weird fascination with so many guys on this team. I actually went through that entire section without saying the words Lynchburg, Virginia's finest, Logan Thomas, or the ODU's finest, Taylor Heineke. But here I've done it. So my God, let's get the hell out of here. That's going to do it for us. You can follow Andy on Twitter at Andy Behrens. You can follow me at @MattHarmon_BYB. And while you're there, for God's sakes, please make sure you're following at Yahoo Fantasy. I'll be back bright and early on Monday morning with the great Scott Pianowski to preview everyone's favorite team. Oh, a team that is wide receiver trio. You know, you don't got to squint at it to think they're good. The Cincinnati Bengals. Until then, we're out.